I believe we're live.
We are live. Are our guests here?
So if you can see us, why don't you let us know in the chat? I see Stephen Polk, Kriti, Eutemia, Asia. Cool.
Awesome.
Stephen can see us, Kriti. Hi. Mm-hmm. And we may have a few others. I saw Johnny Davis here before. Hi, Asia.
Hi, Asia. Do you want to go over some of the technical details first, Marco? So people who are watching may have the option of going on video if they want to and that kind of thing.
Sure. So as you see, there's a chat window. Feel free to use that throughout the conversation. That will stay open as well after we complete this event, and you can come back, or whoever comes back will be able to continue chatting. To ask a question, there's a link on the screen that says ask a question. It doesn't have to be a question, it could also be a proposed topic. And you'll also see there some pre-populated questions that Caroline posed, which we're not necessarily going to go all through. We're going to open it as well. Caroline will speak about this to your topics. You can vote for individual questions or topics that you want to push up in the queue. And then Caroline is going to be our facilitator this evening, and she'll kind of help keep things on course. We will invite individuals on. It's optional, of course. And if you have, if you'd like to speak on a particular question or topic, make sure you open up that link that says that shows the available ones. And if you'd like to speak, comment on that particular topic, and then we'll allow all those people who want to speak on that topic to contribute. And I'll invite you onto the screen, so you'll see a little notice that lets you accept that invitation or reject it. If you accept it, you'll be on the screen with us, and you can speak. We're able to have four people on at one time, so we're going to have to cycle through folks because we have more than four people on the call. And I will, I guess, also say that this is a recording. This is not a recording, but this is being recorded, and we're going to share it. People will be able to come back to this page and replay it later. So if you don't want to be on the recording, you can just hang out in the chat. But of course, we're inviting you on to be part of the conversation. So that's available. I think that's it for technical details. If you have any questions, you just add them right into the chat, and I'll do my best. My role, by the way, will be to produce, facilitate, assist, as well as to participate. But I'm going to be taking care of the odds and ends while Caroline really holds the space for the conversation.
And I also want to note that if you are wanting active but you don't want to be on video, if you hover over your own icon, and I just demonstrated here, you can toggle video, which means that I just turned my video off, but you can still hear me. So if you'd prefer to just be listened to, you can do that too. Yeah. If you have any questions, go ahead and chat them, but otherwise we'll continue. So welcome to the first of three virtual conversations related to Transmuting the Trumpocalypse. Transmuting the Trumpocalypse is a multimedia kind of creative inquiry, which involves a set of nine essays that I wrote, as well as these talks, as well as art and writing submissions that we're curating from the broader community on these themes. So the Trumpocalypse, Transmuting the Trumpocalypse, the essays really are concerned with finding the vein of transformational potential in the present moment, inclusive of some upsetting and you know, intense events lately in socio-political sphere, including Donald Trump's election. And really, the essay series is concerned with societal liberation through a pathway of reclaiming autonomous power at all levels. There's a variety of ways to support Trumpocalypse. There's a donate button on the bottom of your screen if you want to support the creators. And if you also go to cosmos.coop, Transmuting the Trumpocalypse is published on the online journal called Metapsychosis, which is part of Cosmos Platform Cooperative for Visionary Creatives. So I encourage you to check out those things as well. I am a co-founder of Cosmos Cooperative and the author of Transmuting the Trumpocalypse. Marco, would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. So my name is Marco Morelli, and I'm a writer, an author, sometimes a poet, try to be, but it's hard. And I'm also a co-founder with Caroline of Cosmos Co-op, as well as a founding editor and creative director of Metapsychosis.com, which is the online journal of consciousness, literature, and art, through which we're publishing Caroline's series. And one of the motivations for me in working on and producing that journal is to inspire and host and sponsor and facilitate conversations that maybe we're not able to have as easily in the wider media sphere. And so when Caroline told me that she had written this series, it seemed like an opportunity to instigate such a conversation. And we began brainstorming it, and through a series of discussions came up with this idea to host, to publish the essays and host these events. And I mean, we do have a set of goals. These are goals that we've converged on and that you know, are open to evolving and open to input. But we do have a set of goals for this conversation and for our conversations in general. I took some notes. I mean, one of them is that we want to bring our minds collectively to bear on the situation that we're in, living through this time of transformation. In other words, we want this to be collaborative. We're not here to argue with each other or prove who's right or wrong. And we're not even here really to talk about the, you know, day-to-day politics. We're here to work together through, you know, a set of conditions that are, you know, are impacting upon us all, and to try to combine our best selves and our best insights to produce something better than what we've been able to collectively so far. So we want to advance the conversation into, you know, new realms, new territory, or to rework even the language that we use. Like just there, I said territory. That brings to mind colonialism. So we have ways of that we speak that are pre-reflective, and part of conversation is that it allows us to reflect. So we want to have good conversations that feel meaningful to us, that are nourishing, and that let us feel heard, let us speak our truths, and that open us to other perspectives. So part of what we want to do is practice listening and practice mindfully communicating. That's something we want to kind of bring to bear on this. And finally, I'll say that we're interested in conversations that weave, interlink, explore, and experiment with diverse ideas that actually feed into our efforts, our respective efforts, because we're all doing different things, but our efforts to do great things in the world, particularly in this time when it's needed. And so I'm very pleased. We've worked really hard on this. I'm pleased to invite you into it, and looking forward to the conversation that we're going to have this evening.
Great. Mm-hmm. So let me provide a little bit more context. Marco covered a lot about what we're trying to kind of accomplish in this call. And the word really is dialogue. We want to to dialogue and not debate, right? We want collaborative inquiry. We want to create shared understanding. And we want to explore one another's assumptions and ideas. And we have some really genius people in the room, many of whom I know. And I really trust what is going to come out of the conversation. So I don't want to spend too much time on that. I want to dive right into the questions and start the discussion. So as facilitator, I'm going to be keeping track of your time and just I ask that all of you be mindful of how much you're speaking and how much you're hanging back, and consider stepping forward or stepping back appropriately so that everyone has space to express themselves. And there's some special guests in the room right now whom I've invited for their expertise. So I really would invite them to kick off this first question. Before I ask the question, I want to provide some background as to how the theme of life power, which seems kind of vague but also powerful, but what does that mean and how does it tie in with transmuting the Trumpocalypse? So I want to give a little bit of context. In the essays, Transmuting the Trumpocalypse, one of the main theses, one of the main threads of the essays is that there is life power, which is the natural power arising through and channeled through the bodies of living beings, and also the systems that living beings form. And there is meme power. Memes, also another word for memes is ideas or myths or stories. And these are packets of information that coordinate and influence life power in terms of how it expresses itself. One of the thesis of the essays is that if we learned how to better harness and direct our life power and influence in beneficial ways the life energy in us and around us, that we can be more resilient to myths or memes that might want to colonize us and not have our best interests at heart. So being resilient enough to be discerning with the thoughts and stories one harbors and the action that one takes in the world as a result of those ideas. So just quickly, I want to provide my definition of life power before I go into the question and invite all of you to share your definitions of life power. So this is just a quick excerpt from the prologue essay of Transmuting the Trumpocalypse about life power. Life coordinates energy into biological constructs, i.e. organisms, that seek their survival and reproduction. Unlike most everything else in existence, life has an agenda. It seeks its own perpetuation. This necessitates that the organism have some bodily movement or sufficient genetic drift, like pollen riding a breeze or a bumblebee. Genetic furtherance or drift can even be seen occurring across time over generations of selective evolutionary forces, whereby the organism takes an appropriate shape to fit a niche in the environment. This implies that there is responsive action or agency as a built-in quality of living things. A being may be animate to a lesser or greater degree, but even if seemingly unconscious or unmoving, a living organism is acting on the world. In fact, this is one of life's defining features. Life is negentropic, meaning it captures energy and creates forms of higher orders out of chaos. One could describe a life form's innate power as its animate aspect or its activities of consciousness. Even if a species' collective intelligence primarily takes the shape of genetic evolution over multiple generations, the agenda to survive and reproduce persists, giving life movement and thus the power to act on its environment. So, the first question to delve into tonight, how do we understand and define the power intrinsic to living beings and living systems? I want to open the floor first to Asia Dorsey. And I'd also like each person, when it's their turn to speak, to introduce themselves. And that can be defined however you want to identify, either by the work that you do or what you believe or what like your purpose in the world is. But to provide a little context for the wisdom that you represent. So I'd like to invite Asia to speak first, followed by Kriti, Utimia, and Stephen.
Asia's has a note here. It says incompatible. So I'm gonna. I think Asia, you might need to get on Chrome browser if you can. And I'm going to work with you on the side, but invite Kritian for right now.
Okay.
Okay.
Kriti, would you like to take it away?
Kriti accepted and is connecting.
Okay.
Is that working? Hi, everyone.
Hi, Kriti.
Hey, first of all, let me thank both of you for taking on such a huge thing. My God, transmuting the Trumpocalypse. That's awesome. Thank you so much. Well, how do we define? So let me first introduce myself. I was trained as a microbiologist, soil microbiologist, and also did a lot of geology. Isotope geology in my graduate years, and now I work on climate science as far as my profession goes. But I'm also a Zen teacher and Zen priest, and I like to think of myself as climate activist as well. I live in Boulder, Colorado, and really like to think a lot at the interface of spirituality and activism. How can our spiritual growth inform our activism, and how our activism changes how we practice in spiritual traditions across the world. So, life power, you know, before Carolyn defined it, I was thinking more in terms of just the basic intelligence. But I'll come to, I guess, how Carolyn was defining it. I was thinking of more in terms of life energy. You know, there is a Indian philosopher teacher that my parents studied with, Vimla Thakar, and she used to mention this phrase, intelligence, just the basic intelligence. And there is a word in Sanskrit, which you don't have to learn to pronounce it, but it's called Swayambhu. Swayam means self, and Bhu means creating, roughly. So Swayambhu means self-creating energy, right? So even if you go back to just the beginning of life, when life didn't exist and a few molecules chemically, biochemically got together, you know, in these mysterious circumstances and started replicating. So what was there even before there was life? There was that intelligence there even before actual self-replicating living systems were there. So I'm going back even to that point. And that intelligence, that's how I would define it. And I can leave it there and maybe later we can touch upon how Zen tradition helps us get in touch with that inherent, very basic, root, raw energy and intelligence.
Thank you. Thank you so much. All right, Latimia, are you on the call and would you like to go next?
I've invited Latimia on. Oops, she said, I think she doesn't want to go next.
Okay.
So, sorry, go ahead, Caroline. I'm still working with Asia over here.
No. Okay. Okay. Next would be Stephen then. And if anyone else would like to respond to this question, go ahead and comment your name on the question in the Ask a Question section of the page.
Okay, here comes Stephen.
You're Are you there, Stephen?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
No? Oh, you can hear me. Okay. Thank you, Kriti. I think it's been a year and a half since we saw each other at the permaculture design course at the Crimpy last summer. But hello, and it's good to see you. Sorry, I can't get my camera working. I don't know what the issue is. But just as a short introduction, I've been involved in various social justice causes for a long time, beginning with the anti-war movement in the early 2000s. I've been involved with labor unions and environmental issues, climate justice, as well as permaculture and also cooperative living. And I've been living in cooperatives in Denver for the last 12 years. And so for me, I think in order for us as humans to end off our lifetime, we do that in conjunction with other people. We do that in community. We do that socially. But I've been thinking a lot about this idea of like living in community as almost a spiritual practice, in the sense that especially in democratic process or democratic cooperatives, you have to learn how to reconcile your own self-interest in the context of a larger whole. So first you need to identify your self-interest, and that identification of self-interest, whether that's materially speaking or desires or passions or whatever your self-interest may be, is actually a process of self-discovery and deepening your intimacy with yourself, which I think is very similar to many traditional spiritual practices. And then that reconciliation with other people, especially in a democratic process, you realize that your self-interest or the difference between your self-interest and the interest of the greater good are far less, or it's a far less distance than the original thought. And for me, how I've come to like really understand this idea of interconnection of all beings was largely through that process. But in engaging in this, you know, collective process of self-discovery, of learning to work with others, to leverage your self-power, you yourself become more powerful. And just personally, I don't know where I'd be without living in community. I overcame so many issues of, you know, feeling inadequate, of anxiety, all of that through living in collective and community. So that's how I've been able to access my own life power. I'm pretty sure it works for other people too. And that's it.
Awesome. Would anyone else? Can everybody hear me?
Okay, I can hear you now. Sorry, Caroline. What I'm going to do is mute Stephen. I was trying to mute him because he's got some mic issues. And I ended up muting you by mistake. Or somebody's got mic issues. Oh, it's Kriti.
It's actually Kriti.
Yeah. So there might be a fan or something by your mic, or there might be a bad connection.
Yeah.
Okay, so... This is the first time we're using Crowdcast for a live event, and we tested it, of course, but just with a couple of us. So thanks for your patience through the technical difficulties. But the question on the table is...
Thank you for bearing with.
Yeah.
Great.
Oh, okay, and Asia says she downloaded the app, so let's invite her and see if this works.
Great. Let's do that.
I think I have to remove somebody here. So I'm going to, Kriti, Paul, I'm going to remove you. And let's see if Asia's able to get on. Oh no, did it say incompatible again? Let me remove her and re-invite. Let's see if that works. Okay.
Asia, you're here.
Hi.
Hi.
Can everyone hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Wonderful.
Welcome.
Thanks.
Would you like me to re-prompt you?
Yeah.
With the question? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Asia, how do you understand and define the power intrinsic to living beings and living systems?
I don't. And I think that's the most important aspect of it, the power contained within all living things. In my personal opinion, it's indefinable, right? You believe that all things are manifesting from, say, a realm of undifferentiated potential, then anytime we try to define what the power is, we put limitations on it. And I think that those limitations end up limiting us. And so, you know, the power of all things is really, I don't think you can define it, but it exists. And you know that it exists because you see it, you hear it, you smell it, you taste it, you interact with it. That power is just embodied in everything that's around us. Everything is that power.
Would you like to speak, Asia, about what you do or about your relationship to these topics?
Sure. What do? I do a lot of things. My occupation, I'm the owner of the Five Points Fermentation Company. And we are really, really intentional about creating and building a company which supports the people who work for it, but also which really transmutes systems of capitalism as we know them today, right? So we're organizing as a workers' cooperative intentionally in order to undo that element of capitalism, which is exploitation. And so for us, we are really interested in building models for the future so that we can walk really smoothly into the transition that I believe is inevitable. It's inevitable. A lot of our understanding of capitalism is, again, very, very limited. We almost tend to think that it existed forever and at all times, but capitalism is relatively new. We know exactly when it began, where it came from. And thanks to social scientists, we also know it's, you know, the mechanisms of capitalism. And so we can begin to undo those in a way that's really empowering to us and empowering to the communities that we live in. Our economic system will transition just as our social systems have transitioned, as all systems must evolve and change. So what I do is I make really delicious fermented foods and brews. And it makes that transition all the more sweet, doesn't it?
Yes. My awareness of Asia transcends the cooperative that they are involved in building, and also how you're building the cultures of your fermentation too, and the relationship between the body that takes in these fermented cultures and the microorganisms and the symbiotic relationship there.
Yeah, you want to talk about life force and transmutation. I mean, if you believe as I believe that everything is alive, which I do, and you really, I'm taking a course in microbiology, and I just, these beings, these tiny, tiny beings are so significant, and it's a microcosm of a microcosm of a macrocosm of the universe. I mean, they exist in our bodies as we exist on this planet. There are microorganisms which serve, our organism, and there are those microorganisms which deteriorate it. And so you see sort of the way that microorganisms build communities in our guts is very similar to the way that we build community right here in Denver. And if you really think about it, every single microbe has life force, right? Every single microbe is connected to that great the great divinity that we are all, you know, connected to. Not to sound, well, I don't care how I sound. It is what it is, eh? but as we consume these microorganisms and we actually begin to partner with them, right? Some folks brew their kombucha at home. That's a partnership. You make your sauerkraut, that's a partnership. You eat my sauerkraut, that's a partnership. But as we begin to ally with these microorganisms, where we're really allying with great spirits, these microorganisms are ancient. Remember, they were the first things on these planets before there was even algae, right? We had bacteria. So I just think that, you know, we oftentimes think we're alone in these things that we are engaging in, but we forget that we have trillions of little homies on our side, and they're with us all the time. All the time.
So true. So true.
Yeah. So, you know, when we're talking about energy and all those things, I like to bring it down to what I can observe. And there we go. And luckily, like, I can observe microorganisms, I can observe plants and animals and these things. So those are kind of the things that I'm very much interested in. And so mm-hmm. while Five Points Fermentation is the way that I make my living, I'm also really, really interested in alchemy and plant medicine and food in general, indigeneity in general, epistemology, theory of our thought systems. And so I like to look and look at the world in terms of our ideas about knowledge itself. And so mm-hmm. to ally with plants and animals and microbes, you know, it's very much taking on sort of the indigenous view of the world. And the indigenous view seems to be very much in line with what I understand to be feminism, which is a lot different than our current definitions of feminism, eh? Because those definitions are all wrapped up in capitalism and white supremacy. But the indigenous view of the world, I find it to be quite beautiful. So. Mm-hmm.
Lovely. Thank you so much. And I do want to note that power, in the question that I asked about life power, Kriti suggested intelligence. And I agree that could be interchanged with intelligence. So, you know, how do we understand and relate to life's innate intelligence would also work. And on that note, I would like to invite Utimia to share her perspective.
Sure. So I'm going to reinvite Utimia. Would I be able to ask you, Caroline, just for a quick framing, maybe? I'm curious, and you don't have to go on about this, because I do definitely want to hear from Utimia. But why have you chosen to, and in the essays as well, to focus on life power vis-a-vis what you call meme power? What is what's the connection between this and the Trumpocalypse?
Well, as the various speakers have kind of spoken about the actual how we relate to life power has a lot to do with the stories that we believe in and how we're, you know, the cultures that we're immersed in. And those cultures can be more or less healthy or unhealthy, sick and diseased and maladapted, or very lush and flourishing and that kind of a thing. And they're kind of inextricable, because human beings wouldn't have survived to the point that we have without culture, without stories about what we're doing and giving meaning to things that are beyond just the direct internal, you know, meaning that I might have for something. But at the same time, the memes and the myths that we subscribe to can be maladapted, as they are in situations of like Asia's talking about, hello, with white supremacy and capitalism. And so I kind of want to get to the root of what this whole intrinsic life force is that many of us feel a sense of defense for and an urge to fight for and recombine our life potentials in generative ways. So just kind of trying to get to the root of that. And then the next talk next week is actually more about memes and mythology. I hope that answers your question, but I want to give the floor over to Uthimia.
Okay.
Hi, everyone. I'm glad I was able to finally join. I'm like, I don't know how to make them hear me. Technology. Okay, so wow. Thank you, Caroline, for bringing this very apt conversation to Conscious Minds. I really appreciate you and your work. And what was your name?
Marco.
Young man? Marco. Thank you for facilitating as well. Hi, Yuja. Okay, so my work, I'm a Chinese medicine doctor, and I was raised doing Aztec dancing. My ancestry is of the Pueblo and Southern Colorado indigenous peoples and Spanish conquistadors. So I'm a mestiza. I was raised in Denver, Colorado, and I currently live in my grandparents' house that they bought. That's where I'm at right now. It's Grandma's Kitchen. In the 50s in the Five Points. So I'm also super duper entrenched in gentrification right now, which is really intense for me and my family. Life force. So on the daily, I practice medicine. I also practice curanderismo, which is like syncretized indigenous medicine of the Southwest and Mexico, and what is called body talk. Body talk works on applied kinesiology, setting the yes and no's with applied kinesiology and working down a protocol that asks innate or the body's innate intelligence for answers or what is the priority for healing. So on the daily, I'm working with people's innate intelligence and how to heal themselves. And I also employ ritual and ceremony and plant medicine and animal medicine in my practice. I do hands-on healing and spiritual healing, so calling the greater powers. And I see incredible results that I wouldn't even anticipate based on using of these higher powers, where people come in and they're like, oh my God, I can't believe you did that. I'm like, I didn't do that. So I see on the first-hand basis in a very microcosm orientation the power of our own bodies and our own consciousnesses and our own consciousness ability to relate to the higher consciousness or the Tao or whatever you want to call it, universal energy, chi. And commenting on Marco's question to Caroline about why even talk about this, the sad truth of the matter is, and I believe it's very calculated, we have been completely disenfranchised from that power. And I think of it as my personal dharma in many ways, which I'm even like weird about talking about this online. So I'm like, they're out to get us. But my personal dharma is to give the people back their power. And that's what I do on a regular basis, is remind people what foods to eat. And thank you, Sister Asia, for doing what you do. I tell people to buy your probiotics all the time. Re-engaging with our food medicine, re-engaging with our plant medicine, re-engaging with our innate intelligence and our mom-o-meters, like when we know that there's something wrong. And honestly, disengaging from industrialized, corporate, manufactured things that are hurting us and keeping us away from our own agency and our own health, including fear culture, that are not helping us at all, but keeping us indoctrinated and sublimated so that we cannot transcend into our own realm of consciousness, but we maintain the status quo of being sucked into television, sucked into flu shots, sucked into completely not trusting our own innate intelligence. So life force has been stripped from us in that way because we've been brainwashed by advertisement culture in what we're supposed to do, and how, and we don't even know how the ominous they are benefiting from that disenfranchisement of our own agency and our own well-being and our own understanding of who we are and how we are and how powerful we are. So my work is reminding us. Yeah.
reminding us. Thank you so much, Yotimia, for sharing. Reminding, I actually allude to that same phrase in the beginning of the essay called I Say a Little Prayer for You. The idea that we can actually have some space between our inner ability to process the world around us and our apply our intelligence to healing, like you said, and to being whole, and get some space between ourselves and some of these ideas or assumptions that we might react to unconsciously. And that's wonderful. I actually want to segue from the idea that we have this inherent power to heal ourselves. It ties in with some of these ideas of, you know, life has an agenda. It wants to survive, it wants to reproduce, and it wants to be whole also, because we have these innate powers to heal. On that, I want to ask a question to whomever wants to answer it. And we can just, you know, speak up or chat or make a comment to let me know who wants to go next. But what are some of the techniques for harnessing and coordinating our imminent intelligence for healing, for optimal personal, relational, and societal outcomes?
I'm sorry, I was reading the chat. What was the beginning of that question? What's our what for healing? Sorry.
One sec, let me get the question up again. What are some techniques for harnessing and coordinating amongst ourselves our imminent intelligence for optimal personal, relational, and communal outcomes?
I want to weave a few things that have been on my mind. I think languaging sort of what we're really working with, with strategies and techniques. I think this conversation is a lot about story medicine, and the power of what we tell ourselves about what's going on and what we're doing. If you live in a story where the doctors have power and you do not, right, then you create a world in which that manifests. I actually don't think that we ever lose life force energy. I don't think that it can be lost. I think that we forget that it's there. I think that we distance ourselves from our innate innate power, but I never think that anyone away from you. What other people can do, though, is that they can weave a story. And in that story, you can be small, right? In that story, you can be powerless. In that story, what you look like in the mirror can mean X, Y, and Z. And there are so many ways that we consent to the stories that other people weave for us, which is why I'm very much interested in the stories that have been woven by sort of our ancestors already, but also new stories, especially Afrofuturism and the whole project of creating people of color and queer people and poor people in future. That is a powerful tool that we can use right now to craft and weave and give power back to the community. I think the power of storytelling is everything. And in fact, I think that's what it is. I don't think that we are lacking in anything. I already think that we are whole, complete, and perfect. But I do believe that the story that we tell ourselves is making it not so for our reality, because I think that we are ultimately everything. We have the power and we have the power so much so that if we tell ourselves a story that's disempowering, that becomes what it is, in my opinion. So I think tools and techniques to help people to reclaim their own story, but also to remember and to rewrite, remembering stories from the past and rewriting new stories for the future. And that's the most powerful tool you can give anyone.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Luthimia, would you like to respond?
Yes. I super agree with that. Actually, the first thing that came into my head was limiting external input. And that has everything to do with story. So television ads, especially Facebook, you know, it's hard. There's addictive mechanisms. Like nowadays, we are the product. The person is the product. Company will be like, send me 16 to 25 depressed girls. And that is, we are the product according to these social media accounts.
I'm giggling just because that is so true and so cynical at the same time that that's how it works.
Yeah, it's not. I'm not being cynical. I'm being real.
No, it's a cynical culture that's normal in, right?
So that's number one, and definitely as Asia talked about, remembering. Really what it comes down to is connection to self. And once again, coming back to my work, I was raised doing ceremony. So my connection to myself was through dance, through Aztec dancing, and that was prayer. So my prayer was in my body. And I feel like all of our ancestors have these prayers in our bodies. Now, the sad part is colonization. And the first colonization happened in European soil when the Holy Roman Empire killed the witches. And they weren't witches, they were medicine women. They were the women who talked to the plants and healed their children with their medicine, with their hands, right? So there's been this mass disassociation from unconditional love and respect for the mother in general. And that's the onset of patriarchy, AKA ownership, capitalism, et cetera. So tools, there's plenty of tools that are specific, you know, different techniques, but I would definitely say, you know, silence, which Kriti could probably talk more about Zen meditation, but just coming back to the self and learning the self again, because we don't even know ourselves. So many people, honestly, I tell people sometimes innate gives the priority for prayer. Mm-hmm. And I tell people, okay, it's time for you to pray. And they just kind of like, they either like, well, how do I do that? Or, and that just means talk to the great or tune in. It means some people I say it's time for you to pray and they just break into tears because they didn't even remember the last time they had talk to themselves, like from them, their core, you know? So yeah, I could go on and on and on, but somebody else, please.
Kriti, would you like to go?
Yeah, so this is beautiful, so wonderful. I totally agree with what Asia and Yutina were saying, that there's the power of stories, right? Especially Asia was saying, But I want to pick up where Yutimia left. So on one hand, it's the power of stories and ideas and the meme power that I think we will focus in the next conversation. But in some ways, Zen tradition is really asking folks to go beyond stories, right? So you can say, oh, we have negative memes, negative stories, and we can counteract that with the positive stories, right? And I totally believe that is necessary. But for me, where I access my own just deep energy, chi, this intelligence that just rises, right? I mean, it's always there, but it rises from within me and then it wants to express itself in certain ways. For me, that happens when I really allow myself the deepest silence, right? And different meditation traditions have different specific techniques, and I am happy to get into that if that was helpful. But just really deep silence beyond the stories. The positive story is crucial. I mean, when you come out of silence, we are embedded in the memes around us and the advertising and all of that. But for me, going beyond the stories and reaching that space where the negative and the, you go beyond the negative and the positive, that's where the pure, raw, innate intelligence and energy rises for me. So I'm happy to stop there, but this is wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you. And that really resonates with my own experience. Just to quickly chime in about that, I have found that when I am free, or more so free of ideas within myself, because, you know, my ego is working very hard all the time to tell me things about the world in order to protect me from perceived harm, right? But when I'm actually free of pulled or pushed in different directions by thoughts, I almost would say it in these terms, it feels as though the complex of all life beings is able to pass intelligence and energy and insight through me. My intuition in that sense is, intuition is simply an inner alignment with life energy on some level, because it does seem to be providing me with guidance and information that transcends my one being. And I've come to profoundly trust my intuition and distrust a lot of my own ideas about things. Even as those ideas maybe get more mature, there's still limitations, right, to believing, you know, something very strongly. So let me pass it over to Stephen.
Yeah, I feel like you all have added a whole lot. I'm not sure if I have too much to add on top of that. Other than just to say and underscore the importance of, I think, you know, increasing one's life force and by building bonds between people. And just a few examples of that would be conflict resolution. How do we handle conflict to where conflict doesn't become disruptive? I mean, well, sometimes conflict should be disruptive. But how can we treat conflict as a moment of growth and treat it in that sense regeneratively, as a point to shut down or walk away? And so for me, that's sort of the relational aspect that I've learned in terms of like unlocking my own life power.
Could you say more about that? Like what about honoring, you know, different perspectives within the context of conflict makes access to more life power, or however you would put it, possible?
Right. So getting back to, in cooperatives or democratically run organizations, and we say democracy all the time in this culture, but I don't think we really know exactly what that means or how to act in a democratic fashion. But when you're in conflict with someone that is your equal, where, you know, there is no hierarchy, conflict is much different in that context than, let's say, conflict in the workplace in the United States, which is always based on a hierarchy, where someone who is subordinate has very little say in, you know, directing an outcome that is equal to both people. So conflict in terms of in relation to other people, first and foremost, is premised on, you know, that you're the person that you're sitting next to has a fundamental right to life, and a, you know, fundamental desire to be happy. And so that relational aspect to me is learning how to respect that life force while also respecting your own. And I think the end point here, the end realization, is the idea that, like I was saying in my intro, and I think it may not have gotten through all the way, but the difference between our self-interest and another's self-interest, or the difference between our self-interest and the greater good's self-interest, is not very far at all. That what is best for us is best for someone else, which is best for everyone else. And of course, there are times when you need to speak up for yourself and advocate for your own self-interest, no doubt. But a healthy community creates healthy individuals. Healthy individuals nurture healthy community. You can't separate the two. And so that's the sort of unlocking that life power is in relation with other people, recognizing other people's, you know, inherent well-being, and being able to move forward in a way that maximizes like everyone's power.
Yeah. So kind of finding the harmonic alignment between different living beings' purposes and needs, yeah, and cultivating that.
Right.
It's kind of what I took away from.
I just want to quickly say, I think what I'm hearing Stephen say is you need Sangha, right? So even for meditation, most of us need a community, a healthy community where all is, you know, conflicts and other things are handled carefully. Without community, it's even hard to nurture silence that can give access, from my point of view, to that deeper energy. So that's what I'm hearing.
Yeah, exactly.
Great. At this point in the talk, there's a couple more questions that each received one vote. I would love to encourage more participation on these questions. If people want to add their own question or vote on their favorite question, if they're just listening, you're able to do that by clicking on the links on the bottom of your screen there. But as it stands, kind of a small group, and we were planning to use these forms of engagement, these channels of engagement that are available through Crowdcast to kind of inform and guide the conversation. But at this point, lacking that, I'm not sure kind of where to go next. So maybe we could, if anyone has anything burning, a question or a comment or a statement that they want to offer, we can just let it go from there organically, and maybe just wrap up a bit early today. Otimia is I think, interested in speaking again. See in the chat there. If you can make that happen, Marco. Oh, Marco, you're muted.
I was just saying that I'm gonna move Stephen and Kriti for now and invite Otimia on. Okay, here she comes.
Hi. So,
hello.
Thank you so much, Stephen, for that. And thank you, Kriti. Very succinct about community. I kind of want to just reinforce that extremely strongly about how we've lost our communities. And that was, again, a big push of colonization, taking away. The first thing that happens is they take away your prayer. They take away your music. So nowadays, congregation happens in places where there's also a lot of negative reinforcement and negative things happening around, like, music scene where there's a lot of cocaine and alcohol, etc. So we do not congregate around uplifting things as we once did when we were tribal communities, right? Dance, song, story. So I think I guess I wanted to very fervently make a call to action and thank you, Caroline, for putting this together. And I strongly want us to remember that we need to be in each other's presence so we can, like, feel each other. You know, the heart field goes 15 feet in radius. We need to be feeling each other. We need to be connecting over food. How many people, Asia, you know this so well. When you cook something, everybody can feel what you put into that food. When we can sit and eat together, we're digesting. That's nurturance. And that's not only nourishing our bodies, it's nourishing our souls. So everyone in this conversation, and those of you who definitely do cooperative living, we need to be creating more spaces where we can congregate in a way that isn't, no offense, this is awesome, modern technology is great, but a way that isn't computed, a way that is present and loving and strong and doing things together. So that's definitely, I just recently started teaching more classes about these things that I do. And it's just phenomenal watching people remember themselves, remember, oh, wow, if I touch someone, I can make them feel better. Holy shit. If we all did that, Western medical industrial complex be done, you know, and we could have surgeons back that they've monopolized. Sorry, I'll go on one about that. But that's that. Thank you.
That's awesome. Thank you. Yeah. And one of the things that we're trying to accomplish with the platform co-op Cosmos, cosmos.coop, is virtual spaces that meet our needs better and are really centered around our human needs for dialogue and connection. And there are absolutely limitations to not being present together in person. But can we, you know, intentionally try to work to overcome some of those so that we have more generative virtual spaces as well? Thank you so much, Otimia, for that. Okay, let's see. Oh, Kriti?
Well, I am, Eutemia emphatically said yes to community, and I'm coming back and saying yes, to community, and just saying, and it will connect back to the meme power. Community is one place where we can change both our ability to access the silence and the innate intelligence and energy, as well as change the memes that we believe in, right? So that love and that safe, caring environment where conflicts are handled skillfully, as Stephen was talking about, you know, that is also the place where the memes that we are putting our trust in can change, because we encourage each other to look at healthier memes and the positive stories. So this is just wonderful, you know, the for me, community is the place where the inner and the outer work can meet. And if we neglect one of those two, the life force, the inner work, or the meme power, or the external work that we need to do against our institutional forces, right? The greed and aggression on the institutional level, then we fail, right? So yes.
Yes. And isn't just to piggyback off of that, that was beautifully said, Kriti, about the inner and the outer both need to be attended to for growth and positive growth to really occur, because the greed that is manifest in institutional current institutions and systems like capitalism arises from human beings. It arises from our, you know, lived situation. And so we need to confront the urge to have power over one another, the urge to be greedy and possessive in ourselves as well as in these institutions. And, you know, both of those need to be cultivated at the same time. The only other comment that I see is from Asia, and it says to ask the next question, which in that ask questions section. And it says that next question is, how could we align ourselves, like I was saying, with the harmonic alignment? How could we align ourselves with patterns of power that are intrinsic to life processes such as evolution, consciousness, awareness, and development, and empathic and life-affirming practices? And I want to just comment quickly, as a Buddhist as well, I want to comment that to learn a teaching or to take on a practice, say, for instance, of a mantra or, meditating on a particular image or anything like that, each of those practices is itself a meme. But some memes can point us to how we actually can harness our life power in really beautiful, generative ways. You know, any idea that actually coordinates our activity, mental, inner, or outer, you could be looked at as a meme. And so one of the arguments that I make is just that there are some much better adapted memes that perhaps are really focused on cultivating the potential for us to combine generatively relative to other memes. And so the developing the discernment, right? And so this ties in with the consciousness and awareness development processes, developing the discernment to know what's good for you and what's not good for you, right? Like Eutemia was saying, as far as food we take into our bodies. And, you know, we can also apply that discernment with ideas as well. Mm-hmm. So would anyone else like to speak to that question?
I think I would. I think that there is, how do I put this? When we become teachers, I feel like the individualist society has really trained our egos to not be humble enough to take in more information than we offer. So I feel like a big thing in aligning ourselves is, like, when you're the teacher, you're also the student,
right? So within that, even in my own community as a healer, and I don't even really like to use that word, I use question marks. I use quotation marks and question marks. I know so many self-acclaimed healers or even MDs who don't, they're not well, you know? So, So if we're preaching, we need to be practicing what we preach, right? Like, we need to be getting healed as well. And I don't know, probably every Buddhist teacher or every healer or whatever is like, healer, heal thyself. Like, we really need to be going in. And with that comes asking for help, right? In this individualist society, we took away tribe culture where there was the curandero and there was the head chef person and there was the astrologer and the children followed whoever they wanted to follow, right? And we had this village raising children thing going on. And nowadays it's like the single mom has to have the job and make the money and wash the clothes and clean the dishes. And if it's not a single mom, then it's a mom and a dad with the kids, and the mom and the dad have to be everything for the kids and the kids have to be everything for the mom and dad. It's just not sustainable. So really, I think the Sangha is the answer, but also taking personal accountability for what help we do need and asking for it. But moreover, having a culture or reinstituting a culture where it feels safe to be someone who asks for help.
Yeah, that resonates a lot. Thank you. Stephen would like to make a comment, it looks like.
Okay. I'm going to drop Utimi. Is that okay?
Yeah, totally.
Okay.
Thank you.
Just 1 second. While he's coming on, just I'll make a quick comment. And that's that one of the points in your essay that I found to be particularly insightful is that part of the reason we have Trump is because as a body politic, as a social body, this country is this is what you say, is ill. It's a sign of our weak immune system that such a kind of invasive mimetic monster could, you know, come to power and, you know, essentially do a kind of hostile takeover, you know, first of the Republican Party and then of the White House. And so looking at the life conditions of ourselves as social beings, as communities of people, and what about those conditions is causing us to be so diseased. I think it's a really brilliant starting point. I just want to say I think that it's a necessary conversation, and the perspectives that have been shared so far have really all been pointing back to those sets of conditions that make us susceptible to figures like Trump. And he's not the only one. And historically, we know there's always been tyrants and authoritarians and figures that come in and take advantage of a weakened population to assert their own agenda. I'll just comment there. And I think we have, did Stephen make it on? Let me reprompt him.
Would anyone else like to respond to this question? Feel free to chat and we'll get you on.
Well, while Stephen is coming on, I just wanted to say, say yes to what Marco was saying. Part of it is that when people don't really, really know in their bones and through their experience that there is indeed life energy, we are much more susceptible to just staying with the memes that seem powerful around us. So, then it's only memes that can rescue me or not, and I just need more money and on, right? Or more power that comes from outside me. So that was a very good point, Marco.
So I guess I would just like to comment that I think that Trump was elected as a sign of our progress, actually. I I fundamentally disagree with the notion that when we think about disease, right, when we think about viruses, we find that we get infected and then the viruses often go dormant inside of our bodies, and we awaken when they feel that the body is about to die. That's why you get a herpes infection when you're really stressed out, right? Because the viruses, mm-hmm. they kind of go into their little sleep phase, and they're like, we gotta jump ship when something is about to die, when we're about to die. And I think Trump is actually an indicator of the current ways of being that we've had in the society that are getting ready to die. And I think that that's actually why he was elected. We are significantly better than we have been, I think, in any stage of our history ever. The role of women, just there's so many indicators of actually that we're spiraling upwards. We're not broken or ruined or heading for a disaster. I actually think that this is best opportunities that we've ever had to get into the alignment that suits sort of the highest good. And I actually think that that alignment looks different for everyone. I think that there are some people who actually have to be in opposition to equality. I think that every aspect of this reality is the way that, you know, it was meant to be. So I just wanted to comment that I actually think that we are moving towards something really beautiful. And I think Trump is the beginning of the end.
Thank you. Awesome. Stephen, are you able to get on, or are you still having technical difficulties?
Yeah, I invited him. I reprompted him, but I think he's not getting the pop-up coming up.
Okay. I'm sorry. Great. There was some comments in the chat responding to what you were saying, Asia. Yeah, really generative edge, right? What does this mean? And, you know, sometimes things need to die for other things to thrive, right? Something that my friend from years ago, who's a native seed farmer, in the sense that he himself was Haudenosaunee, Native American, and was very focused for his life's work on diversifying seed pools, genetic seed diversity. And he taught me that the human, in his view, the human role in any ecosystem is primarily destructive. But if we learned how to destroy in ways that actually led to the enhancement of life conditions, then that is how we would come back into balance with our proper role in an ecosystem. And he talked about gardening. You know, when agriculture was invented, you must inherently, disrupt the natural wild systems in order to grow what you choose to grow to maintain your population. And so whenever you're disrupting soil communities, disrupting, you know, weeding your garden, you are choosing some things to live and other things to die. And that's kind of what he was saying about the destructive thing. And he spoke about Native women in California, what is now California, historically, who would do controlled burnings and would, they were somewhat nomadic, but they would do controlled burnings where they were settled, in part so that when they would return to that land, it would actually be more biodiverse than it had been. And so that's a great example of how we might destroy in ways that can lead to more generative futures. Okay. Thanks, Stephen, for your contributions. And just checking the chat over here. great. Okay. Anyone else want to add anything? Otherwise, I think we're kind of winding our talk down. It's 15 minutes until 8, and I should have said this up front, but we were going to try to go to 8 tonight. So anyone else want to add any closing comments or any reflections? If not, all right. Let me just make some final comments then about what's up next. So this, I love how we kind of, you know, the intent was to segregate life power and meme power, but you really can't talk about them separately, right? And I love how this talk explored ideas of the stories that we believe and how that shapes conditions for other beings and for ourselves. And that's wonderful. So to close this off, we have another talk a week from today, also at 6:30 p.m. Mountain Time. The chat is going to stay open after we close this event. This Crowdcast page is actually going to stay open, and the chat will. It's kind of a permanent link, so people can watch the video from tonight in the same URL or the same page going forward. For more in-depth follow-up, and if you want to give us feedback on how this worked for you, and I do appreciate you all bearing with as we encountered some technical difficulties that we did not anticipate when we tested this. Marco and I tested this a couple days ago. So we will be looking at that for next week too, to try to resolve some of those concerns. But if you want to follow up more about the content and keep the conversation going, infiniteconversations.com is our forum, where this page actually has its own forum chat. I don't know, Marco, if you're able to grab that URL from the forum and paste it in the chat for people if they want to keep chatting on the forum.
Sure.
And Infinite Conversations is part of Cosmos Cooperative. The essays are all posted now. And so please read them and comment on them. If they light your fire, great, and please share them. Yeah, and we're also accepting submissions of art, writing, and music, and anything else that you want to create to kind of explore these themes. And maybe as they tie in with Trump, or as they tie just in with your daily, you know, experience since the election and just in the past couple years, please submit art if you have any ideas for that. Marco, can you take over for the last little notes?
I'll just say about that. I mean, as a writer myself, the role of creative transmutation is quite essential. You know, the harder things get or the more dire things seem, it seems to fuel my creativity that much more. At least that's one option, you know, because you could go either way. I mean, one could be really crushed by everything that's happening, but there's also the opportunity there to turn that into something more beautiful, something more life-affirming, something that could inspire others, could unite, you know, people in common cause. And so part of what, you know, I would hope is that these conversations and your pieces and anything that people contribute kind of, you know, just like a fermented colony, you know, begins to grow and proliferate and becomes a healthier medium in which to explore and live out and evolve, you know, our life power, you know, towards new and more glorious forms. So that's sort of the, you know, that's my ulterior motive, is I want people to make great art, because that's what turns me on. And to provide a place or some channel where that could be collected, redistributed, made available, you know, for the world, for anybody who needs it. That's my dream. So if there's something you, anybody on this call or watching this at any time would like to contribute, go to the Metapsychosis page /Trumpocalypse, and you'll see some information there about how to do that. Thank you.
Yeah, and please explore cosmos.coop. And if you have any motivation to join us on this strange cultural and artistic and kind of organizational journey that we're forging, please join us. And we have fun together exploring our edges with transformation, cultural transformation. So thank you all for being here. Great. Thanks for all your great contributions. And awesome, there's an awesome chat here, which I'm so glad is going to be preserved for future viewers, because they'll be able to see kind of conversation on multiple levels. And yeah, I hope to see some or all of you next week for the Meme Power Talk, same time, same place. Thank you all so much for your time and contributions. I feel so inspired by what, you know, what each of us is working with and for. So thank you.
Bye.
Bye.